say hello to Floyd Little and Jim Brown, Sean Tucker in the Orange record books with his fifth touchdown of the game.
All across CNY.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
It's the 315.
Hardy faking, feeds to Chris Jameson.
He scores! He scores!
Here's Brian Higgins.
What up, CNY? How we doing here on a Tuesday? Welcome to the 315. I guess we've now officially completed a week since last Tuesday was the debut of this new program for all of you. Hopefully you enjoyed a week of it, and we roll along here. A 4-0 Syracuse football season. Not a bad thing to be talking about. The Giants were undefeated yesterday when this program began. Not anymore. We'll get into that as we move along throughout our couple of hours here today. Here's what's coming up on the old program today. Drew Carter of ACC Network and other points beyond of ESPN will join us at 2:30. Drew hosts a little show on Mondays on the ACC Network called In Play. It's at 3 o'clock. That's right during this program. So I did say I missed it yesterday, but they kind of recap all the Monday press conferences among the various football coaches in the league, what's going on in the league. And what went on in the league yesterday is that one of the coaches is no longer employed. Likewise, one of the athletic directors, Jeff Collins and Todd Stansbury at Georgia Tech, out. We'll talk to Drew about that and set up the rest of the week in the league. Clemson, NC State on Saturday evening. That's where College Game Day is at. Wake and Florida State. That's two ranked teams. That game is Saturday. So lots to talk about in the league. We'll do that with Drew at 2:30. Tomorrow on the program at 2:30 from ESPN is David Hale, who covers that stuff as well. We'll see what David has dug up as far as the future of Georgia Tech. We'll do that tomorrow on the program. 3 o'clock today, an hour from now, we'll talk to Eric Coley, who has been in Syracuse long enough now. He's a sixth-year senior, added 2 years at FM. Came here with his stepdad, Vince Reynolds, when he was hired in the first year of Dino Babers' staff. So he's been here long enough. He's a common-law Syracuse resident now. So he is homegrown in many ways. We'll talk to Eric at 3 o'clock. Eric had not played a ton this season, at least on defense. Had certainly played more earlier in his career. There was a raft of injuries and just general whatnot in the Orange secondary last week. They got Eric on the field on what turned out to be the last and most important series of the game. And who made the play that essentially ended the game was Eric. So we'll hit him on that and, you know, what it's been like. He's been around here a minute and he knows this area well. We'll talk to Eric coming up at 3 o'clock. And then we'll get into the Bills at 3:30. Matt Bove from the ABC 7 station in Buffalo will join us at 3:30. He was down in Miami over the weekend. Little travel delays. Believe he's finally made it back to Buffalo. He was hanging out in the airport for a longer chunk of yesterday than I'm sure he would have enjoyed. But we'll see his thoughts on the aftermath of the Bills' loss, where they almost won via butt punt, but didn't. And the Bills have bigger worries than that right now because their secondary has imploded. There are people, tryouts and whatnot for the Bills. We'll see if Matt has any updates on that. Because what do the Bills need to do this upcoming weekend after they were, you know, unquestionably by most the best team in the league going into Sunday? Now they are being questioned. They're being questioned on defense due to injury. And on Sunday, Lamar Jackson will be the man who's asking the questions. He asks tough questions. So we'll talk to Matt coming up at 3:30. Looking forward to all of that on the program today. But we talked a lot yesterday about Syracuse football is undefeated, 4-0. The Giants are undefeated, 2-0. Now, most of you out there listening are Syracuse fans. Many of you out there listening are either Bills or Giants fans. So there is a pretty good subset of you that is a Syracuse fan and a Giants fan. So you were living high on the hog yesterday at this time. Undefeated, everything, everywhere you wanted, no losses. Well, what we found out last night, especially given the recent history in many ways of both of those two programs, Syracuse and the Giants, is enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it while it lasts, because you never know when the genie's going back in the bottle. You never know when the party's going to stop. And who knows what the rest of the season has in store for the Giants, because everybody in the NFL loses games. Everybody. There's 32 teams in the NFL right now. Only two of them do not have a loss. Only two of them do not have a win. 28 teams in the NFL are either 2-1, 1-2, or the Colts, who are 1-1-1. They've just tried out a bit of everything through three games so far. So every team loses, but the problem is the way the Giants lost last night. Because they lost looking like the Giants of the last 5 years. They lost in a way that was shocking in its horror. They lost in a way that if you're trying to figure out if Daniel Jones is going to be the quarterback next year, you're trying to figure out now if Daniel Jones is going to be alive in a couple weeks with the amount of hits he took from the Dallas defense. Admittedly, a very good defense, and one that has guys that can come and get you. Jones last night was pressured 24 times. It's the second most in the league over the last 2 years, by far the most so far this year of any quarterback. Now, he's elusive, that Daniel. Didn't get hit all 24 times, but man, it screwed up the entirety of the Giants' offense last night. It did not look good. That said, the Giants did have a touchdown lead in the second half, went up 13-6 after their only touchdown drive of the game. Unfortunately, immediately gave up a return touchdown drive after that. And then the Cowboys went on, I guess, what was a 17-0 run to end the game and beat the Giants last night, and sending the Giants to 2-1 in the league. But we can compare it to Syracuse. You can look at both teams and say, man, it was pretty fun the first 2 weeks of the season. I don't think, and even less so, I'd say, than the Orange. People, you know, come into this season, can they make a bowl? Sure, why not? 5-7 last year, going 6-6 this year. That's not exactly out of the realm. I don't know of any Giants people, fans, truth serum, the front office probably, that thought they had playoff aspirations this year, not realistically. You go 2-0, the numbers rise, but nobody really thought they were going to make the playoffs. You know, realistically, my main thought coming into the season is I think they're going to stink, but at least they're doing it on purpose. The last couple of years they stunk, they were trying to win. Not that they're trying to lose, but the roster is not currently constructed in a way that is conducive to winning games. And that is done on purpose to fix the salary cap and the whole deal to get right eventually for the head coach Brian Daboll, the GM Joe Shane, to have it set up the way the Bills set it up. Hopefully get your quarterback, whoever there Josh Allen is going to be. Hopefully one of those will exist for the Giants at some point here in the near future, and set it up and go. But you start 2-0, you say, hey, well, you're 2-0. The Cowboys are 1-1. They don't have your quarterback. Game's at home Monday night. Why not win the game and get the 3-0? Just because you're not great, like not great teams in the NFL, there's 14 playoff teams. It's almost half the league. Not great teams make the playoffs every year. You get two games in, why not the Giants? Last night we found out why not the Giants. Because that is still in the realm of possibility what the Giants put out there last night. Just a stinker. And it was one of those things where everything that we've seen that has been wrong with this team, offensive line, despite two back-to-back first-round tackles, or not back-to-back, but first-round tackles twice in 3 years, Andrew Thomas and Evan Neal. Thomas has been fine. You know, he's a veteran now. Evan Neal was a turnstile last night. DeMarcus Lawrence, who's been a great player in the league for a long time, injuries in recent years, he looked all right last night. Three sacks, and Evan Neal was not anywhere near him. Well, hopefully Neal turns into a franchise cornerstone down the line. Last night, he was a stone. And as Lawrence calls Daniel Jones, he refers to him as Little Eli. He put the younger brother on the ground all night long. And Micah Parsons, my goodness, he's phenomenal. He is fantastic, and the Giants were just terrified of wherever he was on the field in every play, and with good reason. And then everything else goes wrong that goes wrong. You haven't had any pass rush, essentially, the last couple of years. You got the two guys back that you hope could be that. Now, one's a rookie, Kayvon Thibodeau, fifth overall pick in the draft out of Oregon. First NFL game last night, been out with injury. Didn't feature. I mean, he played, but he didn't make an impact. The other was Azeez Ojulari, who had a nice rookie year last year, but his name was not called last night. No sacks of the Cowboys' backup quarterback in Cooper Rush. And the Cowboys kind of ran it down their throat. The Orange, or the Giants, pardon me, are, you know, missing some guys up front. Dexter Lawrence, that would have been helpful in stopping that. the Giants went back to looking like the Giants. They went back to the team the Giants fans have trudged through watching now for the better part of the last decade and looked like it last night. Which brings me back to the idea of Syracuse and what we talked about yesterday. The Orange are 4-0. Who knows how the rest of the season is going to go? They better be 5-0. We've said that over and over again. That remains without something you don't even need to talk about. Like, if they don't get to 5-0, there are bigger problems afoot. But if the Giants or the Orange will be 5-0, one game away from a bowl game, seven games left, and the schedule is brutal the rest of the way. NC State, Clemson, ranked Florida State, ranked Pittsburgh, ranked Wake Forest. Notre Dame's in the mix as well. Skipped over them. And then Boston College at the end. And talk about injuries at the NFL level and the Bills and the Giants. And, you know, injuries happen. It's football. People get hurt. But the Orange have played four games and have lost four starters to season-ending injuries so far. Not really a sustainable ratio. You kind of run out of positions to lose them at where you have other guys to play. And now the Orange have a banged-up secondary, much like the Bills, which we'll talk about later on in the program. But Syracuse is 4-0, and we saw last night with the Giants how fast it can go away. And we know this. There's a cloud. It lingers. When you are not, to use the Dino Babers term, consistently good, when you are not in a bowl game every year, when you're not winning 7, 8, 9 games every year, or if you're the Giants making the playoffs every year, when you're not one of those teams and you get the good start to the season like both of them had this year, like, I think any Giants fan, you watch those first couple games, you won them by a combined 3 points. You're really happy to win the game and the party in the locker room and Brian Daboll after the first game. That was great. But the Giants probably should have lost the game. They won, they probably should have lost. And same deal last week. Easily could have lost both of the first two games of the season, and you're just trudging through it. But there was a new life, a new vitality to the team. I'm not saying that is gone, but, you know, a little bit comes off it when you lose the way you did last night to the Cowboys. Well, it's still there for the Orange. I mean, we know it could go wrong. And Syracuse football fans have seen it go wrong, and this is not a Dino Babers thing. This is just the way it has been too often for too long, regardless of coach, regardless of players. Syracuse fans are conditioned for it to go wrong at some point. So I say this, enjoy it while we got it right now. Who knows what October is going to bring? November's too far from now to even think about with the Syracuse football team right now. But the Giants drove home the point yesterday. Watching that stinker they put up. That Syracuse hasn't had it yet. Maybe they got a couple wins the last couple weeks that were like the Giants' first two. Should they have won them? I'd say certainly more than the Giants should have won their first two games, but easily both Purdue and Virginia, when you're losing into the last 2 minutes of both of the games, and then score late twice to win. Obviously, both of those games easily could have been losses with just one play and each game changed. But they weren't. And what great wins they were. We'll see if it keeps going like this, and hopefully it does. But for now, I think we got time to celebrate it as Syracuse fans, as the Giants had that air come out of the balloon last night, and they're going to be playing a weirdly grim game with winning record teams on Sunday. Giants and Bears. That's 2-2-1 teams. Start the party bus for that one. That one's going to be something to look at on Sunday. The Bears don't pass the ball because they're afraid of it. The Giants do pass the ball. They are out of people to catch the ball. Last Giants offensive play of the game last night. Somehow on this play, David Sills slipped coming out of his cut, which led to the Trayvon Diggs game-ending interception. And independently of all that, like 50 yards away on the opposite side of the field, Sterling Shepard minding his own business, jogging up the field. Nobody near him, tore his ACL, done for the year. Achilles last year, ACL this year. Dude can't catch a break. And realistically, his career in a Giants uniform, if not his career in any uniform, even though he'd been their most productive guy this year, might be over. I mean, he's had two insanely serious leg injuries now. His contract's up after this year with the Giants, and we'll see what happens to him. Wishing the best for Shepard, who, from all accounts, has been a great locker room guy. He's been their most consistent guy when healthy and the whole deal. But that was, you know, just all went into it for the Giants last night. So both sides of the coin, we have seen it over the last half week. If you are a Syracuse fan, and if you are a New York football Giants fan. So I say enjoy it as long as you can out there, Syracuse fans. Hopefully you get to enjoy it all the way through November, but you don't know. The Giants proved it yesterday, and the Orange haven't proved it yet, which is at least going to make the next few weeks around here pretty fun as Syracuse football keeps it rolling here at 4-0 and beyond. Eric Coley will join us at 3 o'clock to talk about that, about the idea of being 4-0 and how that hit him, a guy that's been here now 6 years and really around the program longer than that through his dad, Coley making that game-ending play essentially last Friday night in the Dome, how that struck him personally, and not later in the moment on the field. Oh, 4-0 was the first thing that hit him. And if that's a guy on the team, no reason it shouldn't hit the rest of us out there pretty much the same way. All right, let's hit a break. Drew Carter, ACC Network at 2:30. As mentioned, Eric Coley at 3. Matt Beauvais to talk Bills. He of ABC 7 in Buffalo coming up at 3:30 today. We'll hear a little sound from around the Giants and the NFL world when we come back. As we're rolling along here, happy Tuesday, one and all. It's the 315 on QSportsTalk.com and ESPN Radio.
ESPN 97.7 and 100.1. Watch live on QSportsTalk.com. It's the 315. Here's Brian Higgins.
We dialed up the Katy Perry Just Special for our next guest here as we are back here on a Tuesday. It is the 315. Brian Higgins with you. Time to delve a bit into the ACC as we bring in Drew Carter of ESPN, ACC Network. Drew hosts a little program on Mondays called In Play on ACC Network at 3 o'clock that is kind of, you know, recaps what's going on at the press conferences and whatnot on Monday. Welcome in, Drew. You had a little newsy Monday, huh, yesterday? That is not always the case when we're sitting here in late September in ACC college football.
Yeah, what's going on, Brian? I haven't been aware of any recent news in the ACC. In fact, I'd much rather hear more Katy Perry, less Jeff Collins talk.
Okay, I can pot it back up. We can see. Yeah, there's Katy. She's nice. She's still going. We don't turn her off. But yeah,
can't turn her off.
No, it's been Jeff Collins, and you know he's 10-28, and he's gone out at Georgia Tech. I guess this is the way it is. College football's kind of turned into the NFL, right? You get rid of your coach and your GM at the same time. And in college now, you get rid of your coach and your AD. Todd Sansbury also was shown the door yesterday at Georgia Tech. I don't think it's any surprise that Collins didn't make it through the year, right? But, man, I thought they might wait a minute longer than at least get through September, right? He's played a ridiculously hard schedule, and, yeah, they've gotten knocked around. But I was surprised, I guess, as early in the year to hear the news as we did.
Yeah, Brian, I actually think you could argue that Katy Perry has done more for Ole Miss football than Jeff Collins did for Georgia Tech football in his 3+ year tenure. You know, I hear what you're saying about being surprised about the timing of it, but at the same time, it was such a dumpster fire down there that I think they just wanted to cut bait as soon as they could. The question for me now becomes, what happens with recruiting? That's obviously a very rich talent area. The next guy's going to have to come in and recruit his you-know-what off. They're dealing with Georgia in that same state, and we can talk about some of the challenges later. But I just feel like for them, it actually is going to help them recruiting-wise to cut bait on this guy. And then whoever is doing the recruiting, whether it's someone from the staff who's told they're going to stay on, or I don't even know who would tell them they're going to stay on because there's no athletic director, as you mentioned. They have an interim AD. But maybe they can tell recruits that, hey, here's who we're looking at. And we think we have a good chance to snag this guy. And that's how they can get some people to come in. But, man, that program has gone downhill in a hurry, man. It's hard to fathom that in 2014, they were in the ACC championship against Jameis and Florida State and almost beat them. And they won double-digit games that year. And Paul Johnson, you know, I think he's got to be sitting at home in the hills of Western North Carolina fishing and playing golf and probably drinking a lot of beer, thinking, I told you so, because, you know, he retired or stepped aside. He never used the word retire when he left, but he stepped aside. There was probably some pressure on him to leave. The triple option, is it outdated? Can you recruit? They won a lot of games when Paul Johnson was there, and now, not even 4 years later, they are in the dumps.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a school like Georgia Tech, and, you know, there's schools in specific ways, like better, worse, or otherwise, and for the most part, like, people think Georgia Tech has been a grease fire over this period. No, it's only been the last few years, and, you know, the last year or two of Paul Johnson, they slid. And this is before Paul Johnson, too. Like, they won a lot of games. They were bowl teams way more often than not in the last three decades or so. Even had a share of the national championship as recently as 1990 with Bobby Ross. But you look at what Paul Johnson did. He took a team that historically you're in a great football market, but you're an SEC country, Georgia's sitting right there, the whole deal. And he gave them a very, very, very specific identity. And I get people got tired of the triple option and the whole thing. But man, when you have such an identity like that, Drew, it's got to be really, really hard. And this was much of the problem, I think, with Jeff Collins to come in and change that thing, because like all the people that played in it, well, they signed there from the identity. When the identity's gone, they don't want to be there anymore. And you just didn't have any good players there for a couple of years.
Doesn't it sort of remind you of one certain basketball program in the ACC with a very specific identity and a somewhat stubborn coach who's been doing it for a while? And are they going to change the system when he leaves? Do they have to change it now? Yeah, it kind of sounds like Syracuse basketball when Paul Johnson was there. And I think the fear for Syracuse basketball fans is that something similar happens to that program when the first guy leaves. Like if Boeheim leaves and they abandon the zone, what you said with recruiting, I think it's a little different sport to sport, but that's the fear. And for Georgia Tech, it could not have gone any worse with Jeff Collins. And I think the reason they fired Stansberry is pretty specifically because of the football program. And you said it, Brian. I mean, it's the day and age we're in where college football is king. To an extent, it always has been. But with the money and the NIL nowadays, it's even more so king. And Stansberry botched the Collins situation so poorly, he couldn't have done anything else. I honestly believe that their basketball program could be consistently top 10 in the country, and their non-ref sports could do well, which they have. Like, their volleyball team is great. Women's basketball team is great. They've got good non-revenue sports. But the football program has just been so bungled from the start of the Jeff Collins era. They paid his buyout at Temple, and now they're paying his $11 million-plus buyout at Georgia Tech. And, you know, we're not talking about Georgia here. We're not talking about even Auburn, which is probably going to pay another big buyout after they recently paid one for Gus when they fire Harsin here. Assume that's going to happen during the season. Like, this is Georgia Tech where they don't want to do that. So the position that Stansberry put them in with Collins specifically is, I think, why they let him go, too.
You talk about Stansberry and some of those other programs. Like, it's not like he's void of good hires. Like, they had a mess going on with Michelle Joseph behind the scenes, and there's lawsuits still going on right now with the women's basketball team. He hired Nell Fortner, and Georgia Tech is one of the best teams in the ACC of women's basketball the last few years. But that doesn't get you to keep your job as an AD nowadays, because football drives the bus. Which then brings us to the next question. I don't know who's going to make the hire. Their school president, I learned this today, his name is Angel Cabrera. It's not the golfer, different person. Right. So who knows what's going on there? Obviously, Georgia Tech is a very good academic school, engineering and the whole deal. But the one name that is sitting out there for Georgia Tech or Auburn or anybody whose job is going to be open, certainly in the Southeast this season, and is he ever going to make the move? Is Coach Prime, Deion Sanders. Like, this is the talk of the world. Now, I have no idea, and nobody does, if Deion has any interest of going to coach Georgia Tech. Like, he's got a thing going right now, and it's working really well at the HBCU level. But, like, legitimately, if you're Georgia Tech, you have to make that call, don't you, just to see if he's got any interest whatsoever.
I think 100% you make the call, it can't hurt. The answer is always no until you ask the question, which is a great life lesson, not just in coaching. By the way, Angel Cabrera, the golfer, is he still in jail? Wasn't he in prison for a little bit?
Yeah, he had something went sideways on him down in Argentina. I've lost track if he's in jail on the LIV tour. I don't know where he's at, but I don't even remember what it was. But yes, he ended up in Argentinian jail, which I assume is not where you want to go.
Right, and where he's not is on the flats running the Georgia Tech program or the school. So, yeah, you know, I think Deion is such an interesting candidate. Obviously, they love him in Atlanta. I think anyone in the ACC or SEC, really anywhere, who is upset with their coach, like if you're Arizona State, right. Why not? Like, call Deion. You know, the guy is, he's electric and he's going to recruit really well. I would find it really hard to see him going to Georgia Tech. I know first of all, the money is not a huge factor for him. We know that because A, he's filthy rich as it is, and B, he makes $300,000 a year at Jackson State. So he could have left already for probably a multi-million dollar job, and he hasn't yet. So I don't think Georgia Tech is the answer for him. The only one I would see him leaving Jackson State for is Florida State, his alma mater. And he has been super, I would say, almost like dogmatic about turning an HBCU program into a national power, which is really cool. Like, no one has ever done that. No one of Deion Sanders' stature has tried to do what he's doing at Jackson State, and it's awesome. So as an objective football fan, I hope he doesn't leave. I hope he stays at Jackson State and tries to turn them into a legitimate national power. So I see Deion as not being a candidate, but there are tons of interesting names out there. First of all, I said Paul Johnson did not write off a return to coaching in 2018 when he left. Now, there's been no smoke on that front in the last 4 years, so he's probably done. We haven't heard rumblings like Paul Johnson wants to return to coaching. There's been none of that. If you Google Paul Johnson, he's been off the grid for the last 3 years, and good for him. But speaking of the triple option, Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina basically runs a modern version of the triple option. Could he be the option at Georgia Tech? No pun intended. A lot of people think he'll go to Auburn when they fire Harsin, so maybe he's going to wait for that job. I lived in Birmingham, Alabama for 2 years, and Bill Clark was a miracle worker for UAB. That program was literally dead. He had to revive the program after 3 years of them not playing a single game, or 2 years, and they won a conference championship the next year. He's out. He has back issues. That's why he left UAB. But could the Power Five allure be enough to bring him back? And then the last one I'll give you is the running backs coach at Georgia, Del McGee, who's one of the best recruiters in the country, hasn't been a head coach, hasn't even been a coordinator, but neither had Sam Pittman before they hired him at Arkansas. And that's been a smashing success so far. So Del McGee could be an interesting name, especially if you're Georgia Tech. You'd like to kill two birds with one stone, hurt your rival in Athens, and also get your head coach for the future. So I think McGee could be an interesting option as well.
Yeah, and that means you're rolled back. You've learned, even if not directly, from Nick Saban, because it all spills down from Alabama through Georgia and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Chadwell, I mean, besides Deion, I mean, Deion's by far the most interesting name. Chadwell's a guy I'd lean toward in that scenario because he does something really specific and does it well. Drew Carter, ACC Network, is our guest here this week. And on the field, Drew, Georgia Tech's not beating anyone. They're on the road at Pitt on Saturday night. But Clemson and NC State, College Game Day is there. Can NC State go into Death Valley and do it? Like, they've had all these 8-9 win seasons. This is set up to be, if not one of the best NC State teams of all time, at least that's what they think it or hoping for. Is this the year they're going to pay it off and go to Death Valley and win that game when it really matters for them?
Yeah, you know, I think if the question is can they, the answer is absolutely yes. You're right. It's their most talented team in a long time. They're in the top 10 for the first time since 2002 when Phillip Rivers was throwing to Jericho Cotchery. I mean, try to wrap your mind around that. Like, that is a long time ago. And this is a top 10 matchup for the first time ever. Can they? Yes. Do I expect them to? No. I actually think if I had to handicap this game, I would lean Clemson by a pretty sizable amount. Thank God we're on in Syracuse right now and not in Raleigh, because I know NC State fans are tired of hearing people say that.
Uh-huh.
But I still think, for as talented as NC State is, there's still a pretty decent sized gap in talent between them and Clemson. Clemson exists more in that Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State tier than it does in that Pitt, Miami, NC State tier, for my money. And I think the fact that that game is at Clemson, combined with the fact that NC State beat them last year, combined with the fact that DJ Uiagalelei is actually playing at a higher level than Devin Leary is right now. Like, people don't talk about that, but because NC State is undefeated, but Devin Leary has taken a massive step back statistically from where he was last year. We all like to talk about Tyler Van Dyke and how he has really regressed. Well, Leary has been, like, to a lesser extent, regressing as well. It just hasn't mattered because they're undefeated. It's going to matter at Clemson against that defense, which might be the best in America, especially when you have to keep pace with a team that just dropped 51 at Wake Forest. Now, Wake Forest defensively, not great, but Uiagalelei seems to be turning the corner. Like, all that talk about Cade Klubnik has gone silent in the last 2 weeks. And I think between DJU and that defense against a struggling NC State offense in Clemson, I actually think the Tigers are going to win that one pretty handily.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to the opener with Clemson. They played Georgia Tech. It was that Monday night game on Labor Day. Saying, oh, it's the only game on. You flip it on. DJU was horrendous in that game. Like, wow.
Yeah, he was.
And then Klubnik came on. I realized it's the twos late and just sprints down the field. Touchdown. Like, this guy's going to be starting within the month. DJU's time is up. And he hasn't set a foot wrong in the last 3 weeks and, in many ways, had the best game of his career against Wake Forest last weekend. So he is finally realizing the potential a little bit here over the last few weeks. Drew Carter, our guest, ACC Network. And, Drew, 3:30 game this Saturday. It's two ranked teams now. Wake clinging on to 22nd, coming off that loss. And we talk about, can Deion Sanders take over his alma mater? Well, not right now, because Mike Norvell struggled early, but has FSU undefeated. Three Power 5 wins. They're back in the top 25. This is an interesting little ACC Atlantic game here as far as who's going to step up and be able to challenge Clemson toward the top this year.
It's fascinating. And think about the ACC Atlantic, Brian, and compare it. First of all, compare it to the Coastal. It's just night and day.
Yes.
Like, outside of Pitt, you could say that the six best teams in the ACC are from the Atlantic. The only two who have struggled this year are Louisville and Boston College. BC is a joke this year, but I think Louisville could still be pretty good, honestly, down the stretch of this season. The Atlantic is a beast, and I really think you could compare it with the two divisions in the SEC as maybe the best division in America. You've got four ranked teams, not including Syracuse, because they're somehow not in the AP poll yet, which I'm sure the folks up there are not thrilled about. But I'm excited to see this game. I think I lean FSU because it's in Tallahassee. They seem to have resolved a lot of their injury issues. After that Louisville game, man, they were basically a MASH unit. Jared Verse, the Albany transfer, he was out. Fabian Lovett didn't make the trip. Jordan Travis obviously got injured, and Rodemaker came in and somehow pulled the bunny out of the hat, and they won that game. I think Wake Forest is a better team. On a neutral site, I would favor them. But given the vibes around FSU right now, like, Mike Norvell's failing himself, and he should, absolutely. Like, this is a guy who, you know, Florida State, you lose one game, it seems like you're on the hot seat. And he had an uphill battle to turn that culture back into what it needs to be in Tallahassee. So I really like FSU, and I think the fact that this game's at home makes me lean toward them. But it should be a really exciting one.
Yeah, you mentioned the Coastal, too, and that's an Atlantic game. You said this is the final year of the Coastal, final year of divisions in the ACC. I think Georgia Tech stinking is going to prevent any hope of this happening, of finally, at last, all of the teams finishing 4-4 in league play and it just being perfectly average. But there's four undefeated teams in the Atlantic. There are zero undefeated teams in the Coastal. We got one last year, right, don't we, Drew? It's one last year of Coastal madness and everybody in the Atlantic being like, why the heck can we not be in the other division?
Coastal chaos, baby.
Yeah.
It lives on. Look at Miami, dude. Miami was picked to win the division this year, and they are a tire fire as we speak. So Scott Schaefer, they just got Schaefered. Happened to Syracuse, my junior or senior, I can't remember what it was, but when Schaefer came in as the DC at Middle Tennessee and lit up a victory cigar at the building formerly known as the Carrier Dome, that just happened to Miami against Middle Tennessee. So they are in a rough spot right now. I mean, Pitt is the only team you can feel remotely confident in, and they haven't really looked that great. They've got their own injury issues at quarterback, so the Coastal is absolute insanity yet again, but the Atlantic is freaking awesome. And if NC State, Florida State, Wake Forest, how about Syracuse, any of those teams were in the Coastal, I think they might be the favorite to win it right now.
I actually was. It was, I think, 2017. It was 2 years after he got fired because he took the year off to Schaefer. 2017 was that game in the Dome where Middle Tennessee won. I did see Schaefe coming down the stairs kind of in the back of the Dome that year with the cigar in his mouth. Guy could not have had a larger smile on his face, considering he also had a cigar in his mouth at the time. All right, Drew, lastly for you, where are you at this week? And you got a game this week? What do you got coming up this week?
Well, Brian, as of now, we have a game this week.
Okay.
We have Eastern Washington at Florida. And if you're following the weather in the Sunshine State, you might know that that game is TBD because Hurricane Ian is scheduled to make landfall either tonight or tomorrow in the Tampa area and then move its way through Central Florida. So we'll see. The game has already been moved from Saturday at noon to Sunday at noon. And I've been on the phone with Delta and ESPN Travel trying to get my travel switched, which, as you can imagine, as the entire state of Florida is about to be in a hurricane is not a fun experience.
Well, I don't want to root for you to not work this weekend, Drew, but I'm going to root for you to not work this weekend so you don't have to fly into a hurricane. So that's my hope for you, that you don't end up in a hurricane. All right, Drew, good stuff. We'll catch up again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
That is Drew Carter of ACC Network. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up our opening hour today after this on QSportsTalk.com and ESPN Radio.